social housing, a well-trodden path where there's private provision for a public good.
Hello, welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Alexander, and today I'm joined by Will Mallard. Hi, Will.
Hi, Jerry. Great to be on.
Yeah. Well, Will, we just had a laugh there, right? I'm going to tell the listeners. You basically said, thank you, Vince. Welcome. It's nice to have you on, Jerry, because you're used to doing your own podcast, right?
250 episodes in, I think. I'm used to being on the other side.
On the other side, that's right. And maybe we're going to reverse roles and we'll do another podcast for yours. But let's start off with introducing you, right? We're going to talk about social housing. But perhaps you could just give people a snapshot of the sort of things you're involved in, Will, in property.
Fantastic. So social housing is, I suppose, the core of it. So it's a well-trodden path where there's private provision for a public good. So in many categories within government services, they're not necessarily able to provide within their own, own services. And we sort of fill in gaps, particularly around the financing of social housing, which is quite a complicated space, and supported housing in particular, which is where people have additional needs beyond housing.
Okay, so how on earth did you get into this sector?
A little bit by accident. So I was at a property networking event maybe 5 or 6 years ago here in central London, and I met another New Zealander who'd been over here for maybe 20 years, and he'd been the manager for acquisitions for Amazon in UK and Europe.
Okay.
And he'd completed approximately £1.5 to £2 billion worth of shed acquisitions for Amazon over the preceding 18, 24 months. And he was looking for some direct investment opportunities, and we partnered up and started looking at portfolios. And one of them was a residential portfolio in Leeds. Five houses, four HMOs, and one two-bed. And it was being let to a Church of England subsidiary that provided supported housing. And I honestly, before I went up to that portfolio, had never heard of supported housing. But wow, it had an 11.7 net yield. There was a ability to buy the company with the finance already in place. So there was lots of positive things going on. But in going up, I realised that this is actually an enormous sector. There's approximately 200,000 people currently in supported housing of one form or another. And there's at least another 100,000 in terms of demand. Now, that's UK-wide. We didn't end up buying that portfolio in the end because one of the partners of the vendor partnership basically brought the others out, and the deal was off the table. So I thought, right, this is me. I'm going to find some more, and realised pretty quickly it's enormously complex space. So even though there's great demand and need, there's not the ready-made opportunities, or certainly not at that yield level that we mentioned of the first one. And it opened up another aspect. So as well as the financial and I suppose the social impact aspect, there's an intellectual curiosity where it's so complex that you never stop learning.
And it's not just one type of provision, is there? There's many different...
No. So give you a quick illustration. So mental health is defined by the NHS, which is one of the categories. It has 66 different categories. Wow. And there's 5 degrees of acuity. Each has a separate type of provision housing-wise. And each local authority and NHS area have a different interpretation and application and need.
Yeah. So what classification does this sit under in terms of planning?
So it varies. So social housing is a wider category.
Yeah.
It's basically, it covers anything that that is, I suppose, legally has a bed. So any living provision, be that older people, sheltered housing, retirement provisions, general needs housing, supported housing, specialised supported housing, and they vary from HMO type properties where there's multiple people living in the same shared accommodation, which may or may not have a care provider, which may or may not be the housing provider, which may or may not be the intensive housing management provider, which may or may not be the registered provider of social housing. And it can be any combination of all of those.
Yeah, hugely complex. So let's go with averages then. So if you think about some of the projects you've looked at, how often does the investor actually end up handing over the whole building, portfolio, whatever it is, to a management or effectively on a lease?
Yeah, so I think one of the interesting things is there's an ability to treat it as a commercial finance product.
Yeah.
So the mortgage market for buy-to-lets is directly linked to a mandate which revolves around having an assured short tenancy.
Yeah.
Where there's an ability at the end of that tenancy for the lender to repossess if need be, and a market value is established against that. Where you have a lease to an organisation which a lot of, but not all, social housing and the majority of supported housing, there's a lease to an organisation which generally has multiple layers and that there's at least 11 different scheme structures within that. But at a basic level, it's a commercial finance product that sits behind it, which is against the value of the lease.
Yeah.
And discounted back to present value based on the, I suppose, the organisation, what's in the lease, you know, how easy is it to break. No different than if you were leasing to a Starbucks or...
Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah, but what we're doing here is we're working with an area where people are staying overnight. I mean, another example, albeit different, would be the hotel sector. A lot of people will own the building, but actually it's a hotel operator that will actually rent the building, and there may be a different management agreement or way of topping up the lease amount, depending on how the structure is. But essentially, it's beds, it's somewhere someone to stay, but from the investor point of view, most of the time, it's finding, identifying, getting the deal, all the stuff we usually do, and then putting a lease in place. And do you find that most actually hold on to that, or they just flip it?
It's no different than any other category of property. There's people who play the role of a developer. Some are developed to hold, some developed to flip, some yep. develop on behalf of a... I suppose an end tenant who could be a housing association, they could be an institutional fund, they could be a group of investors who gather together to put a small portfolio together.
And was your experience with care homes specifically? Have you got much experience with those in that part of the sector?
Yes. What are you
Well, I just want... it's something that does come up fairly regularly when I'm out and about. People talking about developing a care home, or indeed buying a care home that's now defunct and developing into something else. Because as you know, Will, one of our main things is do multi-let. And actually, sometimes care homes, ex-care homes and ex-medical centres can kind of work for that model. And what I'm just intrigued about is the condition of that market, the care homes.
Yes, so there's a few things going on with the wider sector. So obviously you're talking about millions of people live in care homes currently.
Yeah.
How they were set up and the structure of the organisations that A, built them, and B, hold the operating leases, if that's the model, and how each of those are financed, and the flow through income. So are they privately funded by, you know, people's individual pensions, or are they funded by the local authority? Are they funded by the NHS? What's the certainty of that income? What are the margins associated with that? And the numbers sometimes just don't work as time goes by. That said, there's often great buying opportunities for, I suppose, version two. And it's a little bit like hotels. There was an old joke that it's the fifth owner is the one that makes money on a hotel. And care homes can fall into that category.
Yeah, where that selling actually rebalances the books so that now the debt on it is maybe more manageable and makes the business model work. Yeah, yeah. You see that in office space too.
And just as a specific example, so we have we're in the last three for a tender process for a care home, which is approximately 40 beds. The county council who owned it, it was outside their what their requirements were, and that they were disposing of it. And what we're looking to do is basically extend upwards on top of it, and it'll intensify the I suppose the living space within that.
Okay, so you keeping area. The same use but increasing the volume.
That's the intention. We're only in the last three at this stage. We know what the bids are, and we're not allowed to know whether we're the recommended bidder or not.
Okay. So maybe you could give us another example of social housing. Before we came on here, we were talking about social housing where you maybe have a critical mass around a certain point, so you may need to provide some office space, somewhere to actually make the...
Sure. I think we were talking about a supported housing provision. So typically a local authority will have a category of need, and they'll partner with a care provider who may be a private organisation, and that care provider may be partnered with a housing association or a registered provider of social housing who gets involved with the management. And they basically set up a little pod where you have a hub and spoke model where you'll have a ground floor office slash retail space that the care operator will operate their local office from. That may or may not also include some interview rooms or chill out rooms for the people who are the residents. They then might have another four or six upper flats above that property, and that hub then sort of feeds out into spokes, and there could be another between 5 and 20 properties within walking distance. And that model was, I suppose, where there's a little bit of a crossover onto the high street, obviously, and you start getting into things like, you know, permitted development opportunities in certain areas where the economics work.
Yeah. So with somebody listening to this who's thinking, they've maybe been looking at the sector from through a different set of lens, whatever, different approaches to it. Somebody who's getting started in this, to me, it just seems like there's a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. Sure, the finance, which we'll cover in a minute, but actually working out who's... There's a big demand, right? There is a big demand.
Enormous demand, very complex, and you should always start with who's your ideal customer. Like that's you know, business 101. Who are they? What do they want? How can you make it easy for them to get it from you? And can you put that into a model that translates into financial sense, that's sustainable and ideally backable by a lender if you're a leverage based?
So for you, developer. For the projects you've worked on, do you feel that market is a little bit opaque? For instance, there's not a register where you can go to where everybody said, oh, this is what we're looking for in Dorset, or this is what we're looking for around Newcastle. Or is there visibility of what...
So there's been multiple attempts to put together a version of what you're describing. But the reality is that you need a partner. So it would be a little bit like if you were setting up a hotel as a builder. You need a partner who's going to be the operator.
Yeah.
And you should start with that. And what they need is different than another hotel operator or...
Yeah.
And you're building to spec, in essence, or buying to spec is probably more common.
So would it be fair to say then your approach is getting to know those local providers or requirements for providers and then going out and finding deals? Or yes. Do you sometimes find it doing the other way around?
Yeah, in general, it's never going to match up perfectly. There's a timing issue as well. So in order to get a lease signed up, there's a series of steps, and I don't know how detailed you want to get, but local authorities have typically either two tiers, or there are unitary authority where there's different departments that operate. And in supported housing, you've got two separate departments have to sign up, and they're on different, or siloed workflows. And people will instantly relate to this, where you have a care, so the person who has an identified need, there's an adult social services has to sign off that person's eligible for the care provision. And then there's and that's usually at a county level in a two-tier authority. And then at a borough or district level, you have a housing department that has to sign off the payment of the rent and assess the rent. Now, in order to assess the rent, you've got to have the property.
Yeah.
And until you've had that assessment and effectively had an agreement to lease signed, you're relatively exposed. And one way of, navigating that is to have a partnership with an established care provider who ideally is connected to a registered provider of social housing or a housing association is the typical example of that. And that actually helps the local authority in terms of their ability to recover the revenue that they're outlaying for yep. For the lease income.
Okay.
Or at a higher level of central government subsidy than they would otherwise.
Yeah.
One of the things that's I think anyone who has follows the news, councils are under enormous pressure. One of the biggest pressures is around the inability to recover funds from poorly structured schemes. So one of the top points in this is around temporary accommodation, where there's a statutory obligation for a local authority to provide housing for anyone who presents with a housing need. They don't have enough houses available. And bearing in mind, there's over 5 million social houses in England.
It's a lot.
Yeah. They're probably short about 2 million, give or take.
Yeah. So I want to come back to finance, but I'm going to do that next. So for a typical asset that might suit, and I appreciate there's different need requirements, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what sort of assets do you think that one might work? You know, there's probably some go-to things. It might be an ex-care home. It might be an B&B or something. Is there specific buildings and you've got that lens on, you think, do you know what,
probably the simplest thing is self-contained properties that are so an example would be a small block of flats with six flats and off-street parking that was located in an area that was near a GP surgery, near a pharmacy, near some shops, near some public transport for care workers or yep. the residents to get into whatever the town centre is for the locality.
Okay, so ordinarily somebody might look at that and say, because they've got the resi hat on, they're thinking, right, I'm going to get six PRSs in, or I'm going to do service accommodation or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But actually this is just another way of viewing that property and actually getting it effectively let out on a commercial lease for and a period of time. And what is that typical kind of time frame?
Yes, so it can be anything from like a 6-month rolling scenario to up to 40 or even 50 years.
Yeah.
Depending on what category that you're dealing with. So one of the big issues, there was a quite a large scale public company scandal that's ongoing with the Home REIT, which is a listed company that raised $850 million, borrowed another $150 million, and now has a net asset value that's, I think, $300 or $400 million,
okay.
which is not, you know, despite having a great idea and just not doing the homework. And that there's a number of reasons behind that. But that was basically around a lack of due diligence on what was in the leases for who. So what we're led to believe is that they signed up with leases to organisations that hadn't even spoken to the local authorities, that they were essentially saying that we're underwriting the the income streams. And then there was great surprise when only 7% of the contracted rent was collected, and the organisations that are on the leases appear to be falling over. So, and this is a big publicly listed property investment business.
Yeah, that's a big stain to deal with. Just, you've made me think there's another part to this, of course, which is planning as well. So you spoke about those two tiers, but, you know, this picture's getting more complex, right? Because there's the other aspect of, well, there's a block of six flats to take
your example. So the planning use essentially revolves around are there people who are going to require on-site, and if you think a care home versus a house, like that's a very easy way to visualise that, and that they obviously have different planning requirements, and people, you know, people from time to time convert one to another, or convert as you're, perhaps looking at there's a lot of derelict or unused care homes where the sites are in interesting locations. You've got a structure which may or may not be usable for some other purpose, and that could be some form of office space. It could be to split it up into smaller residential units. It could be a combination of the two. And one of the things that changes from time to time, and this is no different than any other residential class, is the what the space requirements are, what the market demand is. So if you went back 50 years, most care homes, for example, wouldn't have had ensuite bedrooms on average. They're increasingly expected, or if not mandated, and what the minimum size requirements also change from time to time.
Okay, so we've got one plate spinning here about finding the customer. There's another two plates spinning with the local authority. There's another plate spinning here, right, with the planning. And then the other main one is finance, right?
Yes.
So just talk me through how this is viewed by the financial institutions.
Okay, so at a very high level, social housing, you're in the tens of billions of invested capital. It's enormous. So at the highest level, yes. There's lots of money floating around. If you're a small individual investor, you want to do a little bit of work in advance before, I suppose, planning your retirement off the back of one of these deals.
Yeah.
Because of all the aforementioned issues, you're going to get some uncertainty. Lenders don't like uncertainty. And what tends to happen is it's a very easy way for them to pop up a percent or two on the interest rate, drive down 10% or so on the loan to values that they lend at, and look to put all sorts of onerous provisions on. Now, that's them within their purview to do that. They've been given the money on a mandate, and the mandate is basically not to lose it.
Yeah, so
Which might not seem fair if you're the person who wants to be given a pile of money to get a income stream for life.
Welcome to our world, yeah. So, I mean, just based same principles as maybe the world we work in. If you've got a contract in place that is 6 months rolling, that's going to be more difficult to finance. If you've got something that's a 40-year lease, that might be slightly different to finance. And I'm assuming there's probably different lenders with different appetites that will get into that space. If I was just starting this process, I would feel, you maybe disagree, but I would feel I'd probably need to try and find something with a longer lease period to be able to open up to more competitive finance. Would that be the fair way to say it?
It depends what you're trying to do. It really depends. So if I... and also how much time and expertise, if you wanted like a really, sexy way to approach this, have an attempt to find a single title property that has 4 to 6 units in it. Buy it, ideally buy it really, really keenly price-wise. Do the title split.
Tick, tick, yep.
You've created a little bit of fat, straight away. Make some modifications in terms of improving the accessibility, which may open up some grant funding. And if you're partnered with the right care provider, who has an arrangement with either the local authority to access those grants, you can find a big portion of your refurb cost is paid for. You've got an uplifted value, even if you don't have the lease in place. And then you're looking to one of the things that people seem to forget is that when you're providing housing, most people want to stay there long term. And as a local authority, like their big thing is that they don't want people, to be in future housing uncertainty. Now, the ability for them to sign a long-term lease will vary enormously based on the policy of that particular local authority, what the category of need is. We've mentioned the dozens of mental health, which is just one of maybe a dozen sort of larger categories.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different ways. Do a bit of work. Find the care provider would be the first port of call. But then buy well.
Find the customer first. Try and buy it under market value. I mean, tick, tick, right? There's sort of things we always talk about.
And try and find some paper-based uplift.
Yeah,
and they're all around you. Like if you take a walk, and if you're not living in the middle of a rural area, take a walk around your locality. There's opportunities all around you. There's people retiring. There's people who they've had a business partnership that owns some property and now they're disposing of it. Find some of those. Find someone who's good at finding some of those.
Yeah. So you're talking there about adding paper uplift. And one of the things you just spoke about there as a strategy is maybe title splitting. Your reason for that is that the valuation is coming back better because there's now 6 units which could potentially be sold off or rented out separately. But in terms of the operator coming in and taking on the property, does that make any difference to them that it's a single title or multiple titles?
So they'll be leasing a particular space.
Yeah.
If you think about how that works in a commercial single title building where you've got multiple tenancies, it's the same.
Yeah. Okay.
The requirements of what they need are primarily to do with the suitability, which obviously has to be compliant within whatever they're doing. But that's a different thing to the legal ownership.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. So this has been really interesting because this is a sector I'm not familiar with, but the principles sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
right? There's lots of plates spinning. Try and find the need first, then find the building, mm-hmm. work through the process. Try and find someone who's got a fairly secure income that's going to raise, it's going to make the ability to raise finance a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, the returns mean that actually holding some of the stuff long-term is something that people do. Whereas sometimes when you're doing resi property mm-hmm. and you get a 4% or 5% return, it's not mm-hmm. always attractive to hold, because actually there's an opportunity cost for going and taking that appreciated capital you've put in, or the capital that's grown, to go and do the next project, right? But it sounds like there's quite a lot in the sector that will buy and hold.
Yes, so the vast majority of stock is no different to commercial. People are holding it for income.
Yeah.
Or the end, you know, the yeah. end owner. And that there's an appeal which is, I suppose, backable by a version of a mortgage or some other lending product because of that likelihood of future income.
Yeah.
And as a very, very, you know, like people talk about risk, no English local authority has ever defaulted on a long lease residential or supported housing payment. Not once.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that can't happen, but what would have to happen for that to happen is Britain would have to cease to be, or the pound would have to cease to be a fiat currency, because invariably they're going to print more money and recapitalise the councils. People may or may not be familiar with public finances, but a local authority has a general account and a housing revenue account, which is basically a separate flow through. In the event of an insolvency for a local authority, the housing revenue account keeps flowing just the same.
Yeah.
So I'm sure everyone's seen, you know, a Birmingham or similar have effectively gone under. There's the equivalent of a public sector receiver administrator being appointed. That they run the finances of the general account. The housing income just keeps flowing through.
Yeah. Okay, this has been really fascinating. Well, you've got your own podcast. Let's quickly talk about that. So if listeners have listened to this as a strategy and are thinking, well, I've seen a building that might have worked, where can they find you? What's the name of your podcast? So they can get more information.
Probably the easiest way is on LinkedIn. So it's, yep. It's Will Mallard, like the duck, quack, quack. and the podcast is My Property World.
My Property World, yeah. Okay, perfect.
It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other...
Maybe. All the other platforms that people listen to stuff on. Right, fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks,
Appreciate Jerry. Appreciate it.